Ladies and gentlemen, this podcast, truly one of the most unusual ever recorded, contains dribble, slang, and frank discussion of subject matter which under no circumstances should be heard by small children, persons with a heart condition, or anyone who is upset easily. If you are such a person, or if you're the parent of a very small child in the room, we urge you to switch off your streaming device now.
Hi, Jen.
Hey, Kim. How are you?
I'm fabuloso. How are you?
Fabuloso? That's new.
I know. Thanks.
Well, I'm glad you're fabuloso.
I know. It's new. I'm trying out some new words. I'm just going to make, because, you know, you and I have word problems anyway, so I thought we'd just make some up.
Hey, our own language.
You know what I'm saying?
Our true crime podcast language.
That's right.
Awesome.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Uh-huh. What? Yeah. You know what I mean?
Whatever.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Whatever. We have some shout outs.
I know.
And I thought we would just like to say thank you so much to these people. They've written us a nice, nice, super nice, fabuloso review on iTunes.
Awesome.
So let's say thanks to Batgirl64.
Aw, thank you, Batgirl.
CodyMac09.
Cody Mac, you rock.
Cody Mac attack. Just Jenny 2012.
And that's not me, but thank you, Just Jenny. I think she came from Cambo from True Crime Island.
Oh,
I think
that.
Cambo. Oh, suggested us.
Ooh, her. Heart.
She follows us on Twitter too.
And last but not least, Lena Penguin 119.
Lena Penguin.
I like that. That's a cute little
name.
That's
a cute little name.
We just wanted to say thank you so much and give a shout out. You know, it makes a big deal when you guys give us a review. Like, literally, we are high for like 3 days.
Exactly.
It makes us super happy.
And not only we have our Patreon, which of course we don't expect anybody to do. I mean, but the 5-star reviews or positive reviews really help us plus other podcasters. Mm-hmm. So it only takes a couple minutes out of your time. Leave a nice note. It's amazing what it does to our low podcast esteem.
It's true. Mm-hmm. Makes them smile and happy and kind of get you energized to go back in and sit in your room for 8 hours and write a script.
Or longer.
Or longer, yeah. Depending on what it is. So, Jen, speaking of Patreon, real quick, we have some goodies, some cool stuff that we're going to work on putting together this week for them.
Nice little goodie bags, introductory goodie bags.
Mm-hmm. I love junk like that. It just makes me happy.
It's not junk. It's good quality stuff.
No, but you know what I'm saying. I like getting something in the mail. It's like Christmas. I love it. You know?
And I forgot all the deets to our Patreon, but most Patreon subscribers do get goodie bags at least a couple times a year.
That
so. Might want to check out our Patreon page and see if something you want to do.
Also, Jen, have 2 episodes in the bank, which we will be putting on Patreon. And one, all I can say is a doozy. My mouth hit the ground. I was like, are you kidding me?
Really?
Yeah, just something else. Let me tell you.
So that's going to be the minisode for Patreon?
Yeah. Wow. Well, it's a full episode, but it's about 10 pages or so. So it's close to an hour, but
it's a good one.
A shocker.
Nice. And then another one we have planned is called Happy Hour with Cam and Jen. We will discuss the day's topics.
It'll be like The View, only like The View for losers. And like the TV show The View, but The View for losers.
And less bitchy. Just us.
Yeah.
Well,
bitchy to each other.
Bitchy to each other.
Not other people. I'm ready. Hit me up.
All righty. Are you ready?
I am ready. Told you I'm in a good mood today.
I know.
Okay.
I know. All right. So here we go.
Let's go. Let me fasten my seatbelt.
Click, click. On the early morning of February 22nd, 2003, Tulsa, Oklahoma 911 answers a call from a man claiming he sees flames coming from the back of a house on Yorktown Avenue. The man stated his name was Kenneth, and he had been driving home from a friend's party when he saw the fire. The 911 operator asked for all the info, and then she heard Kenneth talking to an unidentified male.
Mm-mm.
When she tried to ask Kenneth a question, she realized the call had been disconnected. The firemen were at the scene at 3:14 a.m., 4 minutes after the 911 call. That's really quick.
It really is.
It really is.
And that's really early in the morning, late at night.
Upon arriving, they found a Nissan Altima blocking the road in front of the burning house. One of the firemen noticed the driver was slumped over the steering wheel. Thinking the driver was drunk, he went to try to wake him up. The fireman then noticed that the driver had been shot in the back of the head and barely breathing. The other firemen went into the residence where they saw that the stove had been pulled from the wall and the gas line had been cut. They shut the gas off and quickly put out the fire, but also on the kitchen floor they discovered a man lying in a pool of blood with a rug partially covering his body.
Ooh.
Since the fire had been extinguished and the gas turned off, the firemen left so they could preserve the crime scene. Investigators came into the house and discovered a nude woman lying in the back bedroom. She had been shot 3 times in the head. Police ID the two in the house as Fred, 51, and Rebecca, 42, Barney. They had owned the house. The man in the car was identified as 24-year-old Kenneth Maxwell. Fred Barney was pronounced dead on the scene. Kenneth Maxwell and Rebecca Barney were taken by paramedics to the emergency room where they died. Neither one ever regained consciousness. Police looking into the background of the three found the only thing that they had in common were the .22 caliber bullets that were found inside their heads.
Ooh.
So looking deeper into the crime scene, police found Rebecca's clothes in 2 piles in the dining room, with her glasses folded neatly on her sweater. They also discovered blood and bullet holes in a pillow that was laying near Rebecca's head. The police surmised that the killer had put a pillow over her head to shoot her, most likely to muffle the sound of the gunshots. Both men were shot at point-blank range in the back of the head. Rebecca was shot 3 times, so they knew Rebecca was the target. Police started looking into the past of the three victims. Kenneth Maxwell was a truck driver, and besides living fairly close to the Barneys, there were no other connection. Now, Kenneth Maxwell, he stopped and did the right thing by calling 911 about the house fire, but it cost him his life, which is really sad. I mean, now, Fred and Rebecca Barney were in the process of divorcing. They had been married for 6 years, didn't have any kids, and it was a very friendly divorce. They were still living together, basically, in separate bedrooms, but they were going to live together until the divorce was final. Actually, I think they had separated and moved separately into separate houses, but then Fred allowed Rebecca to move back in. The investigators saw there was no forced entry to the house, which indicates that they knew whoever it was that came into the house, that they knew their killer. Although Fred's wallet and Kenneth's cell phone was missing, police didn't think this was a robbery, because they found cash, credit cards, jewelry all throughout the house. TV was still there. Anything really of value was still in the home. But when they walked into the home office, the computer monitor was laying on the ground, and there was dangling cords where the computer tower should be.
Mm-mm.
Why would somebody take a computer tower?
Because there's something on there that somebody doesn't want somebody else to see.
You think?
I do.
Wow.
I know some of these cases sometimes.
Yeah, there's some kind of evidence that maybe involves the internet and the computer.
I think so.
Yes, SMRT, Camille.
SMRT.
Camille Smart.
I'm not just pretty, I'm smart too. That's what my mama tells me.
Police started asking around to see if anyone knew what Rebecca and Fred had been doing that night of the murders that Friday. So they said, you know what? They always go to this bar called Arnie's. Actually, Arnie's Bar.
The Barneys go to Arnie's?
The Barneys go to Arnie's Bar. So it was only 5 minutes to their house, and they were there fairly often. God, it would be nice to have a bar 5 minutes from the house.
No, it would be terrible. Terrible.
The patrons said that the Barneys were at the bar that night, but they also had a third party with them. It was a very tall man that they had never seen before. Rebecca kept introducing him as my internet boyfriend, or this is my 10-inch cowboy.
Does that mean his spurs were 10 inches?
I'm thinking something.
His lasso was 10 inches.
His lasso. Other at the bar mentioned Fred seemed really tired and also said that he looked not so thrilled to be there and he didn't exactly like the man Rebecca was with. Staff and friends from Arnie's said that all three stayed the night until closing time at 2 a.m. Closing time. Medical examiner found that Rebecca had been sexually assaulted before being shot. But getting DNA was difficult because Rebecca had been on her menstrual cycle.
Oh, it's never even occurred to me.
Mm-mm. So her DNA was so overwhelming that they were having a horrible time trying to separate hers from other DNA from that was. Mm-hmm. So luckily, by some hero, fast-thinking paramedic, they had swabbed her body down in the ambulance on the way to the hospital.
Oh.
So while other people were saving her life, this other paramedic was taking swabs.
Hmm.
So they were able to get some saliva DNA from her neck and her breasts. But when they put the DNA profile into CODIS, it didn't have enough of the markers to make a match. Police searched the Barney's home to see if they could find any other information of the cowboy. While digging around in the office, they found some computer printouts of emails from Cowboy4U67.
Oh, I would have went with 69, but okay.
Plus a computer-printed copy of a guy with username TrueHeart481. Now, in the picture, the man is unrecognizable because he has sunglasses and this huge cowboy hat over his face. Mm. So they couldn't really figure out who the hell he was. Upon reading the emails, investigators found that they were incredibly explicit. Very sexual in nature. They even discovered that Rebecca and the cowboy exchanged nude photos.
That's how she knew he was dangerous.
Hers were very coy, very boudoir-like, very modest.
Mm-hmm.
His was just a picture of his penis mm-hmm. with a ruler. He was proud.
He could fake that. Come on now.
It's the only thing, Mama, the only thing he inherited from Daddy. So police knew the cowboy was the killer, or at least a witness to what had happened that night. They just needed to know who the hell he was. What's his name? So with a court-authorized search, the Tulsa Police Cyber Crimes Unit found Cowboy4U67 had met someone 3 days prior to the murders, a Wild Ivy 2003.
Hmm.
That was Rebecca's username.
Wild Ivy?
Wild Ivy.
Hmm. Okay.
2003. And it was kind of interesting, too, because one of the Forensic Files episodes that I watched on this, they interviewed the Cyber Crimes Unit guy.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, from now on, like, every crime is going to have some kind of digital or cell phone.
That totally makes sense. Wow.
Element to it. So they did find out that Cowboy4U67's real name was James Jimmy L. Kidwell, and he was from Gore, Oklahoma, which is about an hour and a half away from Tulsa. James was a 31-year-old, part-time computer science student, divorced, two kids, and living with his mom because he was having financial problems. So he was a catch. So Tulsa police then called the Gore police station to notify them that they were coming to arrest James with a warrant. But surprise! They already had him in custody.
Oh, no way.
It seemed Gore police had pulled over a red truck with a man and a woman inside. And during the license check, they discovered the driver, James Kidwell, had a warrant out for his arrest. It seems that he had a domestic violence incident and where his ex-girlfriend claimed that he had slashed her tires.
Wow.
And when he was asked if they knew why he was stopped, he said, well, I just figured it had something to do with what happened in Tulsa.
So he knows about that?
What, James?
Yeah. The murders, I mean?
I just said he figured it had something to do with something in Tulsa.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
Are you not following the story?
No, I am. But like, why would you offer that up?
But while the police had him pulled over, they noticed that he had recovered a .22 caliber rifle in his car, which James said that he was going to pawn. When Tulsa detectives got to Gore, they had a warrant to search James's car, and it was full of trash, fishing gear, and things that made police think that he was actually living in his car. They found live .22 ammo along with spent .22 casings.
Oh.
During the interview, James admitted that he had been with the Barneys at Arnie's and had gone back to their house.
And he's giving them all kinds of info.
And he was hoping that, you know, there'd be a little something-something. But since Fred was there, he knew that it wasn't going to happen. So he left after about 10 or 15 minutes. Then he also asked what happened to Rebecca because he hadn't been watching the news or read any newspapers. So, on February 28th, the police set bail for James at $300,000, but he wasn't named as a suspect or he wasn't charged with the murder. He was only being held as a material witness to the murder. So, a material witness can be held as long as it is necessary to prevent a failure of justice. This means that the people being brought in for questioning under material witness warrants can be held as long as the judge deems it necessary. One reason to hold material witnesses is they are considered likely to flee the country. Mm-hmm. So I'd never heard about that before.
I had no idea either.
But it seems that it became big, controversial after September 11th because they were holding some of the terrorists without being charged. Gore police interviewed the 25-year-old woman that was with James in the car when they were pulled over at the time of his arrest. The woman said she had met Kidwell on the internet in a chat room, and they had met face-to-face for the first time on Sunday, the day after the Tulsa shootings. They'd been out together three times since that Sunday, but she had no idea what was going on with him. All she did know is that he was always with a loaded weapon. He kind of scared her, and she really regretted meeting him.
And this, boys and girls, is why we are careful about who we interact with when we meet them on the internet.
Exactly. Police then get a warrant to search James Kidwell's mother's house. They didn't find a murder weapon, although they did find out that James did own a .22 caliber handgun. But they found his computer. On the hard drive, they found that he was in contact with numerous women, but one file was deleted, and that was Wild Ivy 2003. That was Rebecca. The recovered data showed that James and Rebecca had met 3 days prior online. And in those 72 hours, they exchanged over 70 emails.
Wow.
The day after the murder, no emails were sent. In fact, James actually blocked her ID number from the dating site. And the day before the murders, Rebecca had given James her phone number. When police went to look at the Barney's caller ID, Jamie's mother's phone number was the last number that had called the house, and that call was made at 9:34 p.m. on February 21st. They also found that James's search history showed he had been looking at online newspapers about a triple homicide.
Oh.
About this triple homicide. Police did a very thorough search on James's mom's house, and they found 3 items of clothing that belonged to James in the dryer. Boy, if they come to my house, they'd find a ton of stuff in the dryer. On the sweatshirt, they found some rust-colored stains. They tested the stains in the lab, and even though they'd been washed and dried, they could still get a DNA profile. While they couldn't exclude Rebecca's DNA profile, it was a 1 in 12,000 match that it was her DNA. And they also found Rebecca's DNA on the gear shift in James's nasty-ass dirty car.
Is that the brand name?
Yeah, it is the brand name.
It's a Honda nasty-ass dirty car.
Dirty car, dirty car. So now police really have to put James at the scene. They've got everything that they think they need, but they need that killer.
They need just a little bit more.
They need just a little bit more to make sure that he was the one that did it. There's no fingerprints at the house to place him there even. So they go back to the rape kit that was done on Rebecca when they'd gone back to the hospital. Now, remember, she was on her period. So all the DNA that they could find was female DNA. But there was still some male DNA in there. And I did not know this, and this was a shock to me. There is a process called Y-STR. And this process zeroes in on the Y chromosome, which only men have. The analysts were able to extract a DNA profile just from that process.
That's amazing.
Isn't it? And the DNA matched, of course, James Kidwell. So on March 14th, 2003, James Kidwell was officially arrested and charged with 3 counts of first-degree murder. The Tulsa detective's theory was that James was ready for a night of hot and heavy sex. So when he showed up at Arnie's bar, he was shocked that Rebecca's soon-to-be ex-husband was there, maybe a little angry. They think that Rebecca had asked Fred to be there just in case things went south.
That's exactly what I was just thinking.
And that's a good thing to have happen. I mean, she did the right thing with that. But Fred didn't want to be there because he had just gotten back from a business trip, and that's why he was so tired. After closing time, the three went back to the house on Yorktown Avenue. Fred went and changed into his pajamas. And then prosecutors say that Rebecca refused to have sex with James, either because of her period and because she didn't like him. Who knows?
Right.
We don't know. They also theorized that James got very angry and left, but yet he didn't leave. He just left the house. He left to get a .22 handgun that was in his car. When he went back into the house, Fred was in the kitchen making a sandwich. James snuck up and shot him point blank in the back of the head.
Ugh.
When Rebecca came in to see what the noise was or what would happen, James forced Rebecca at gunpoint to take off her clothes, then took her to the back bedroom where he raped her and shot her.
Ugh.
Before fleeing the house, he pulled out the stove, cut the gas line, lit the fire, and then took the computer tower, thinking he was in the clear of destroying every bit of evidence, mm-hmm. which he would have if he wouldn't have ran into that meddling kid, Kenneth Maxwell. But as he was walking out, he saw Kenneth in the car on his phone, and he walked up and he spoke briefly with Kenneth. And
he did. He said something to him.
And then shot him. The 911 mm-hmm. calls, you hear Kenneth going, hey, is that how, you know, that fire? And then you don't hear anything else. So on November 23rd, 2004, James Kidwell's trial began. The jury consisted of 8 women and 3 men. And the jury, I thought this was kind of interesting. The jury had been picked from a larger than normal jury pool, mm-hmm. 80 potential jurors. I've never been on one that large before. Normally it's about 30. Mm-hmm. This is 80. And the lawyer said because of the amount of publicity that was in the case and the complications with the holiday of Thanksgiving being that mm-hmm. time, that was why they needed more people. One of the people that testified against James Kidwell was a fellow prisoner by the name of Jack Harris. He was also a jailhouse informant.
Mm-hmm.
He was a snitch.
Snitches get stitches.
Mr. Harris stated that Mr. Kidwell had told him he was worried about the voice heard on the background during the 911 call.
Oh.
Mr. Harris testified that James asked him if he thought the FBI had the technology available to enhance it and get a voice print off of it. And Mr. Harris said, yeah, I think so. And then James said, well, I think I'm fucked.
Oh.
Jack Harris also said Kidwell told him that he had sex with Rebecca Barney and also said that James told him the fire was supposed to cover up the evidence.
Mm-hmm.
So on December 15th, 2004, after 15 hours of deliberation.
Wow.
That's a long time.
Yeah, it is.
And it seems like it's a pretty open and shut case.
You'd think.
James Kidwell was found guilty of 3 counts of first-degree murder and sentenced to 3 life sentences to run consecutively
mm-hmm.
and a $10,000 fine for each of the victims,
hmm.
which doesn't, it's not mm. enough money.
No.
He'll never be able to pay it back.
Yeah,
but
they'll never say penny.
Bill, Rebecca's brother, said that the case illustrates that women need to be very careful with internet dating.
Mm-hmm.
As James' verdict was read, his mother started to cry, of course. As he was walking out in handcuffs, he mouthed, I love you, to his mother as he left the courtroom, mm. which is very sad for her.
Right.
But screw him, man. That was cold blood. That's a sex.
It strikes me funny that somebody could be that cold and that cruel and calculating and have never done it before.
Exactly.
It just tends
just
to make
weird.
Me think he's done it before.
The district attorney said that if Kenneth Maxwell had not stopped to call 911, that the murders of the Barneys may never have been solved, because testimony indicated that if the firefighters had arrived 5 to 10 minutes later, the house would have been a total loss.
Mm-hmm.
And because the firefighters managed to control the fire, investigators recovered evidence that pointed to James Kidwell.
Mm-hmm.
He was the hero, but it cost him his life. Here's a little update for you about good old James. When he was put into prison,
mm-hmm.
he had 14 teeth.
Did he have those when he went to go see Becca? And
I have no idea. Life in prison hasn't been really kind to this little 10-inch buckaroo here. By 2006, he had lost all of his teeth.
Mm-hmm.
He pretty much only had 14 to start with anyway. But when he got to the jail, he had 13 of the 14 of those remaining teeth removed. And then a little while later,
he just kept one? Why would you keep one tooth?
Well, a little while later, they took that too. So he's toothless.
But why do you have one tooth?
Oh.
Just take them off.
For aesthetics.
To chew food? It's one.
One tooth. So he's been fighting to get dentures in prison
mm-hmm.
because he claims that
he can't get himself a friend.
No, I'm sure he can get lots of friends being toothless. He complains that he's been constipated because of that, and he can't really chew his food properly. But they're not giving him dentures. They say that when he first filed for the claim in 2006, when he first lost his teeth, but he never kept up with the claims. So I don't even get.
Do they do dentures then? I mean,
you can. You get totally.
Think,
you too. Yeah, because there's other ones.
Eat.
But it's by a mental. Well, he was offered a soft food diet, but he refused. So they said that he's not in bad health. enough to get dentures. Like, he can still eat. He's just constipated. And, you know, he complains that he's had significant weight loss, which he hasn't. When he checked in, he was 6'7" tall, and he weighed 252 pounds.
Huge.
Yeah, 252 pounds. And his weight has fluctuated, but they said that not so much that he's underweight. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, he'd have to weigh like 163 pounds to be considered underweight. So he's complaining that weight loss, continued pain, misalignment of his jaws, facial distortion, other issues with constipation. Mm-hmm. He can't chew his food. But the court's not giving it to him because upon further looking at his canteen purchases, his purchases include Laffy Taffy, kettle corn, corn and potato chips, crunchy cookies, candies, pizzas, and granolas. So the boy ain't getting teeth.
Well, to be fair, I mean, at least the popcorn doesn't get stuck in his teeth. And the candy does not cause any cavities. So that's good. They don't have to pay for
that. That's what's keeping his weight up. I didn't write it down, but it had something to do with he started to complain in 2007. And then he didn't complain again until 2013. So he went past the time when he could have had it.
Like, you obviously.
Like, he didn't complain at all. And then he started to complain again. And by then it was too late.
I got to see a picture of this.
He's the toothless
cowboy.
Cowboy. Toothless 10-inch
cowboy. That was good.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
So I thought that was interesting, especially the part with the YSTR DNA.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense, though.
Analyst. But I didn't even know that was a possibility. And it never even occurred to me about a rape victim who was on their menstrual cycle, what would happen with DNA and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was kind of interesting.
That was something else, let me tell you.
Be careful, ladies and gentlemen, because there's crazy ass women out there too.
Children, anybody.
Mm-hmm.
That is something. I wonder, like I said earlier, it makes me think that he has had to have done something similar. It just seems so cold that to be able to do that. Like,
because
that wouldn't
of sex.
Most I mean, people would just be like, they'd get angry and leave or whatever, you know, and not do all of that and kill the guy on the phone. Like, why?
Because he was the witness. He saw
and he could identify him, but.
And was only 24 years old. He was a hero and he lost his life.
But,
and thank God for that paramedic. That was honestly quick thinking. Yeah. That's amazing.
Yeah. I guess they're trained for that, maybe.
You would guess, but I never heard that happen before.
Yeah. And I would think that the shock of rolling up on a case like that. Or a scene like that would be, that would probably, whoop, you know what I mean? Like, make you not be thinking straight.
And thank God for the firefighters getting everything aligned up perfectly.
The whole house could have exploded and caused damage to nearby houses, for that matter.
But yeah, just an interesting case
all
around.
That was interesting.
I thought.
I do too.
Be careful about those 10-inchers, ladies.
All right, Jen. Well, you want to tell the fine people where they can catch us?
Twitter. At our True Crime Pod.
Facebook. Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
We have a blog spot.
Mm-hmm. Once again, want to thank our heroes, October Pod, VHS.
You heard him at the top of the show.
Mm-hmm. And Nico for making us sound intelligent. And
even though Jen's not.
I'm very intelligent. I have a high IQ.
Mm-hmm.
And editing and music and all the wonderful stuff he does, because he's wonderful, as October Pod VHS is.
Nice. All right, Jen. So we have lots of work to do this week to get out to our Patreon people.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to start working on that tomorrow. And until then, remember, lock your doors.
And keep passing by those open windows.
Bye-bye.
Love ya. The other firemen went into the residence. They saw that the stove had been pulled from the wall.
Okay, sorry. I heard like a did you hear that? Okay. I don't hear it now. Wait.
Is it your drugs kicking in?
It is.
Did you take Addie today.
Oh, yeah. And mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's why. Yeah, but that's why you're excited.
I am excited.
Neither one ever regained consciousness.
Consciousness. Did you see the Kawabaway?
Kawabaway.
Sorry.
Neither one of them regained consciousness.
Say that again, because I stepped on you.
The Clarneys. Did I say the Clarneys?
No, I said that. Because the Barneys.
I don't know.
Barneys.
I haven't had any sleep, so yeah. You know, they say once your kids grow out of infanthood, mm-hmm. that you get more sleep.
Mm-mm. I do, but that's because mine. We're on opposite schedules, but whatever. But yeah.
All right.
When your little one gets a little bit older, you'll be good.
Yeah, but at 3 o'clock making fucking ramen noodles? No.
She's hungry.
I'm starving. I'm starving, Mom. I'm starving.
Bang. Boom, boom.
Me.
That was my voice.
Yeah. Okay. Sorry. While digging around in the office, they found some...
some computer paper.
Computer paper pin out some email. While digging
happy hour with us is gonna be
a
shit
so
show.
Much
I apologize in advance, Nico.
There's only one 10-inch thing going for him. That's all I'm gonna say. And it gets better. Wait till you hear this part.
Sorry,
at the end. Okay.
Funny. Yeah.
Okay. But they still sorry.
That demon coming up again.
It is.
Get out.
It's get out. My Christ, get out of our house. Bye, Nico.
Bye, Nico. 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 He's our guy. He can't do it. Open your fly.
Nobody even tried.
For the 10-inch cowboys coming for you. And that's all I got. Lock your door.
Love you, fun. Nico. Bye.
Bye.